The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
JD, I know you hate when I start these interviews in a formal fashion, so what's going on, man?
I mean, I should ask you that question. I feel like we've started on this journey together, so to speak, of that long interview we did together last year. Now look where we are. Look at us. As Paul Rudd would say, look at us.
Well, new gigs for both of us, and I'm obviously with the Sharks. I'm happy about that, but you are all over the place. You're a part-time Sharks broadcaster, NHL Network, Amazon Prime Canada package. You've got the brand new podcast. Like, where do you even want to start with all these new ventures for you?
It's been a lot. It's been a lot of saying, I feel like Jim Carrey and Yes Man, where I've just said yes to everything. And now I'm at this point where it's like, now I have all this on my plate, but it's been great. It's honestly been really good. You know, if I didn't have the support system I had and my wife and family, I mean, I wouldn't be able to do all this. And it's been really good to be able to kind of flex my muscles and try new things and do things that kind of align with what I enjoy. So, you know, unfortunately that's not all that I'm doing. I got other stuff, but that's not hockey related. That is crazy in the business side of the world, but yeah, it's kept me busy. So I'm busier now than when I played hockey.
You know, the thing though that you have is all those years of experience of playing hockey, growing up in the game, understanding the game. And that's why probably a lot of this broadcasting comes easy to you. But that's kind of what I want to narrow in on so far and what you've experienced, whether it's in a studio or at a rink calling a game. What comes easy to you as a broadcaster? And what's the part where you're like, this is not easy?
Yeah, that's tough to answer, but you know, because it's tough to answer without sounding cocky or arrogant.
Go ahead.
When you're like, what comes easy to you? No, I honestly, just having fun, you know, my belief that, the unwavering belief that when I played hockey and started playing hockey, that it's just a game and I take that in with me everywhere. And it got me in trouble when I played hockey a lot when I was younger. But, you know, I take that everywhere, that this is just a game and you know, life is finite and you got to have fun every day and try to enjoy yourself as much as you can, because you know, eventually we're all going to be, if you're playing hockey, eventually you're not going to be able to play hockey anymore, and if you're calling games, it all ends at one point. So just kind of enjoy it. And you know, the things that have been tough it's a different muscle. And you know, NHL Network is a muscle because you know, you really can prepare and you know what's coming, you know the questions that are coming to you, and you know the topics you're going to be talking about. So it's very easy in terms of if you're prepared, you should be able to get through it. Now, your delivery and things you add, your own personality, that's the difficult part. But in color commentary and broadcasting and doing stuff with Dan Ruzanowski and you know, Drew Remenda and Randy Hunt, I mean, I gained such an immense respect for these guys, the work they put into this on preparation. But you know, when you're in a game, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, we were in Nashville, it's 5-1, everything's going good, and then all of a sudden you get a call, your tone has to completely change, because you go from very elated, excited, to still calling a game that, you know, they've now blown a lead and they're losing the game. And you have to kind of keep that same energy, because fans are listening and they're listening to your voice, and you have to have somewhat of an unbiased opinion. But you could feel it, you know, sitting with these guys, these pros, these legends, you know, Ruzo, Honor, and Remenda, how much they care and want the team to win. So it's like, you see it kind of, it's almost like a nuanced thing. You feel their anger and disappointment, but they're still so professional and still kind of enjoying the game. So that's the part that's been tough, is being able to manage that. And because you do have to somewhat manage emotions. I can't just be up there like a monkey dancing on a razor blade. Like, I have to somewhat give, I have to be restrained at times, because you're also working with a partner. So there's that level of team game. Whereas I find, you know, that's been fun in doing NHL Network and this broadcasting is there's still such an element of team there, because everybody works together and we all want to support each other and make sure that we're given the best show possible.
It's a little bit like playing. I think you're realizing that there's preparation, there's teammates, teamwork, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose on a broadcast. On the Sharks' recent road trip, you obviously got to see them firsthand for more than a week's time in those five games. What are the characteristics that you, somebody who played this game at the highest levels, what are some of your takeaways of this collective group and where they're at right now and how this season is going?
Well, you know, there's a lot of hope at the start of the season. And, you know, with Macklin and Will coming in and, you know, when they got Askarov, there's a lot of excitement around the team. And, you know, they're a fun group. You hear a lot of people saying a fun group. But you still see that layer of competitiveness and disappointment from this team when they're not winning. And, you know, it's been a struggle lately. You know, I was there for the highest of highs in that Detroit, at the starting of that road trip against Detroit. They win 6-3. They put together a complete game. And then, you know, after that was very sporadic throughout that road trip, and there's no hiding it. I know all these guys on the team, and they all seem like fantastic guys. They are great guys, and love the game. And but you know, it's just the standard slipped a little bit, and you know, obviously behind the bench, you could feel it. You could feel a little bit more tension now because they think at the start of the season they set the standard that they want to follow, and it was kind of, they were keeping that level high all season. And then now just recently, the past four games, it's kind of slipped. And then before they won that Detroit game, it had slipped a little bit too. So there seems to be a little bit more tension than there was previously because they want to keep that standard high. Yeah. And again, everybody wants to win. Nobody comes into an NHL season. I don't care if, you know, I haven't had tons of conversations with Mike Greer, but you know, if, even though you're in a rebuild, you want to win. If you were a GM and you could say, I want to rebuild and also win the cup, they'd all say, yeah, great, let's do it. That's the same. If I could do both at the same time, it'd be perfect. But you have to kind of take your medicine. But at the same time, it hurts every time you lose and you lose 2 points. And, you know, it's guys' jobs, it's guys' lives on the line. So you kind of feel that a little bit more pressure and tension. So because they know it's not good enough, and coaching staff knows it's not good enough, and the management staff knows it's not good enough. So now it's kind of the accountability side of things. So for whatever reason, have had this kind of little bit of, I don't know if it's fear built into them that, you know, when things go bad, they kind of just retreat a little bit when they don't need to because they have the talent. You know, from what I see, and if guys listen to this and hear this, from what I see, when they're playing their game, they're a very hard team to beat. Whether they win or lose, they're a hard team to beat, and they can make plays and they can score goals. It's just having the confidence to do that, shift in and shift out, and also do it, you know, treat it, me and Ruzanowski were talking, is when you have the lead, treat it like you're behind and just keep that mentality that you're always striving and trying to get better and better and trying to win. And listen, 5-1 is great. You're up 5-1. Try to kill them 10-1. Yeah. You know, no mercy. So I think the guys, you know, a little bit of fear has gotten built in, and they, you know, maybe some scars and wounds from last year, and they don't want to go back to that. So you almost play not to lose instead of playing to win, which is, you know, you've been around this a long time now, Brody, you understand, and you've seen the ups and downs, and you get that that's no way to play the game or live life is playing not to lose. You just got to play to win every day.
You got to do what got you there. You got to keep doing what got you there. Considering that we hope nothing changes, we like the trajectory, we like the pace of Macklin Celebrini. I love his season so far. The big things, the goal scoring, but all the little things too. If nothing changes on this trajectory, from your instinct, what are the odds he wins the Calder?
Right now he's my pick just because of games played. But, you know, there's a couple guys. This is probably a lot better of a year rookie-wise than it was last year. I mean, I'm a firm believer. My thought is this. If you're going to hold Connor Bedard to the standard you did last year, where even though he was out for, you know, 2 to 6 weeks with his jaw,
right,
he still won it because he had a point a game over Brock Faber, who was completely healthy all year and played, you know, I thought shot the lights out and deserved to win it. If you're going to hold that standard, it's got to be the same for this year with Macklin. Even though he missed those games, he's still been the most dominant rookie, I think, game in and game out. Obviously, Lane Hutson is severely making a case. And, you know, my only issue is the thing of it too is whoever votes for this, like they voted in like 60 games in. So there's no like end of the season. So I would say all by that account, I would say Macklin Celebrini for sure. Now, if Lane Hutson gets to the playoffs with Montreal and stays on this point total, it's hard to not give it to him. But I think the voting will be in for that. And then look out for Dustin Wolf as my other guy. We looked at the odds yesterday. I think it was, he's plus 3,000. And I don't want to get into betting things with people, but that's the odds they have him at. And, you know, if he gets Calgary into the playoffs as a goaltender who's leading the charge there with 25 wins, I mean, how do you not consider him at least?
I think he would be the first goalie to win the Calder since, do you know who?
Carey Price.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was going to say Nabby, but I forgot about the gold standard. My bad.
I mean, Nabby was there too.
Yeah, so, yeah. He was. I forgot about Carey Price. I wanted to bring this up, though. You said whoever votes for the Calder, the Professional Hockey Writers Association votes for the Hart, the Norris, the Calder, the Selke, and, of course, the Lady Bing. Is that the way it should be? Who should be deciding these awards? Now that we're in the conversation of Calder and the Sharks and Celebrini, who should be giving out these awards?
I mean, I would love for the NHL to eventually get into a set group of guys that they build, you know, and girls, but like a set group, a template of people that kind of judge, whether it's somebody from every conference, kind of like judges in a boxing match.
Right.
And I honestly think...
You're saying a diverse group of people instead of just the Professional Hockey Writers Association.
Yeah, because there's a bias, you know, and there's a bias on the East Coast. There's a bias on, you know, there's a bias on where they're situated. So it would have to be very strategic. But, you know, I just see it as something that, you know, they vote for it so early too. Like Quinn Hughes last year wins it. Not to say that he didn't deserve to win the Norris Trophy, but he wins it. And, you know, we're on the network talking about the odds for it. And Roman Josi's having like probably one of the best 20 games of any defenseman in recent memory to get Nashville into the playoffs. And the voting was already done in the last 20 games. And he went on this absolute tear. And I understand that you want to vote it, you know, consistency wise, but you have to look at all the factors around it, where he is. You know, it can't just be a points race for the first 60 games of the season, because that's just unfair to guys. And not that I'm a big awards guy anyway, not that I didn't win any, but, you know, I'm in an awards. It doesn't matter to me. It's just, I think the fairness of it is more, you know, I think that it should be a little bit more strategic on who's in the panel, where they're located. Maybe they already do that, and I'm just talking out of my ass, but you know, that's what I see, because I find at times, you know, now being on the other side of the lens, I'm like, how are we voting for this now? Like, we should wait till game 82 and then decide. Then we should be voting at game 82 all the way through playoffs and announce it during playoffs instead of announcing it, you know, basically everybody knows 60 games in.
By the way, the Vezina is voted on by the NHL's general managers. So that's weird that one is different. Everybody else comes from the PHWA, excuse me. Back to the Sharks, and this is kind of a weird question. You know, wins and losses are obviously important, and to your point earlier, the guys on the team, they understand the building process that's happening here, but they also don't want to lose. From a judging the team standpoint and judging the growth of the team standpoint, like how you might see them, do wins and losses actually matter from your perspective this year, or is there something else that you're looking at?
I think it always matters. You know, you got to get wins, and you have to try to get 2 points. And, you know, I always go back to it as, you know, obviously a GM, you're all a team and you're an organization, and you're, you know, the common goal is to win the cup, but, you know, trajectories for each person is different, and the path for each person is different, especially a GM to player, because the GM has a rebuild 3 to 5 years. Players' average expectancy to play in the NHL is 3 years. So you have to do enough to win. So, and I always tell guys that I talk to, and if I talk to a younger, I'm like, listen, you may think that points matter and your own personal points, but if the team doesn't win, guys don't win. Right. And when teams win, the collective as a whole wins, whether it's contracts, staying in the league, getting more opportunities. So if you're constantly out in April, listen, I was a product of that. I was with Arizona. We didn't make the playoffs. Well, we made the COVID year, but 4 of the years we didn't make the playoffs, people forget about you. They forget that you're playing in a place that's not competing and you're not given the same respect. Now the top guys are, because the top guys are the top guys, but the middle of the pack guys aren't to the guys that are the bubble players. So for me, I always thought of it as a teammate, like wins matter, because if we win this game, whether I have points or not, I'm benefiting. Guys next to me are benefiting. The coaching staff is benefiting. Everybody, the GM is even benefiting. So yeah. Everybody's benefiting with wins, and there's a little bit more, you know, you get a little bit more leeway, so to speak. So I'm just always, doesn't matter. Fans might want it because they want the first overall pick. It's like, why would you lose for a first overall pick and expect players to lose for a first overall pick to have somebody come in and replace them?
Yeah, well, culture matters too, right? And winning breeds and fosters that culture. You don't want to become a group that's been soured because you've just been losing a lot, even though there's a ton of potential. Just a couple more things, JD, and I'll try and get through these quick. Yaroslav Askarov, like, I think we already understand where he's at already at 22 years old. He's going to be great in this league, and time is going to help him get there. I'm actually okay if we don't see him entirely with the Sharks the rest of this year, and I'll say that because the only other place he would be is helping the Barracuda make a playoff run and then getting that group some playoff experience in a postseason if they get there. So I'm kind of satisfied wherever he's playing, it doesn't matter. Just to know him and to have him, I think, is the bonus. What's your take on Askey?
Well, I mean, his personality is just has a, you know, a top end goalie. You know, he's just so calm, and he's got a similar personality. Obviously, it's the Russian version of Mackenzie Blackwood, where it's just very loose, very, very kind of open, yeah. You know, enjoys the game. You know, I love guys like that, you know, don't take it too seriously. And, you know, when it's time to take it seriously, he's there. He's able to turn it on. And I mean, he's so athletic and almost too athletic to the point where he relies on that a little bit too much. And I think he's learning. He's been working with, you know, Coach Spears, and he understands that, you know, if they just calm him down a little bit in terms of his, you know, those acrobatic saves and stay within the structure, I mean, he's going to be a top end goalie for years to come. So I love what I see from him. He wants to play every game. He wants to be out there. And, you know, when he's not out there, he's supportive and he's not sulking. He's, you know, he's upbeat. So I just think, you know, the future's bright. I think getting him in a trade is a huge move. It's going to help this team long term. And, you know, you obviously feel for Alexander Georgiev coming in, and, you know, they got a good goaltending tandem right now that have given them opportunities to kind of stay in games for the most part.
I want to pick your brain on something from Player Insight. And when Vlasic or Zetterlund mess with Drew on the bench, right, during warm-up, or like back in the day when I was doing bench interviews and it was you or Pavs or Bernsey putting a stick in my face, what's the actual message there from player to broadcaster? Is that really to give us a hard time, or is there just a little bit of respect there maybe?
No, we just hate you guys.
That's the truth.
Now
huh?
that I've seen the other side, you know, now that I've had personal experiences with you and Remenda,
it's worse than you thought, huh? Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit probably in private, and, you know, since I've been on the other side of it, I've just developed such a respect for the organization and how it's run. And, you know, guys, you don't see it because you're so engrossed in your game and you're worried about, you know, your routine and winning that the whole culture, that it's not just your team that is the team. It's everybody. It's the broadcasters. They're the ones that are ambassadors for the team. And, you know, they get the word out. They have the heartbeat of the team. They understand sometimes more than general managers and coaches what this team needs and what they see, because, you know, they've been following it so long. They've been through the ups and downs. You know, the one constant in a lot of these teams, especially, like, you look at Randy Hahn and Dan Rusinowski. I mean, these guys have been here since the inception of the Sharks. They know probably more about the culture of the Sharks through the years than anybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really see those things. You know, I sit with Dan Rusinowski on the plane, and, you know, when the team scores a goal, the elation that he has is not manufactured. It is complete authenticity from him. And when they blow a lead like they did against Nashville, his anger is so high. And he is so upset because he wants the team to win so bad and the guys to do so well. And, you know, you could talk to him privately and try to say, oh, this guy didn't play good, and he'll always have their back. So it's something that's really cool. And it's really allowed me to kind of develop a deep respect for what these guys do, what you do. And I mean, I think I always knew. That's why I messed around with you and stuff, just because, you know, it's fun. And it probably provided me some relaxation. But yeah, like the team services guys, everybody around it, you know, they do their job as well, and they're part of the team. So it's so yeah, it's my long-winded answer is all coming around to me saying that yes, it's we respect you.
Oh, that's all I needed.
We do.
That's maybe all not Burns. Burns, no, he didn't respect anybody. Fun fact, by the way, Drew once was so angered by the result of a game that he walked home from the rink, from the on the road, from the rink to the hotel, and it was in Denver. You know that that's not a short walk.
No,
I've got this opinion, and this is the last thing. I want to make sure that I'm on the right track of thinking here. From where the Sharks are at now to where they want to be, I feel like there's two steps in between here to there. And the first step is get back to just being a 500 type team points wise, you know, 80 something points a year, 90 something points a year. That's step one. And then step two is eventually getting to being a playoff contending team on a regular basis and then put yourself in that conversation. Am I right about those kind of two milestones that they need to reach here?
Yeah, you need to get back to some semblance of consistency and winning and expecting to win every night. I know they expect to win every night, but you do see a little bit and you could feel a little bit of the hesitancy and kind of the, I call it the little bit of the shock of last year is still lingering on them. And they, not to think that they don't think they're good enough, but there just might be a little bit of self-doubt there. So I think they need to shake that first and foremost. And, you know, understand, like I said, if guys are listening or hear any clips of this, it's like, You deserve. You're in this league. You can play in this league. You gotta play like it, and you have to earn it, and make sure that, you know, don't take this stuff for granted, and don't play with fear, because you know, coming from somebody that did, and we had long conversations about it, you know, you shortchange yourself and you shortchange your team. Yeah. So I think they need to get that out first, and then the next step is, you know, back to the playoffs, and you know, Sharks fans are starved for it. They understand. I think they realize now how good they had it all those years and are now just happy with a good showing on the ice. And I think that's going to be the first step. And then, you know, I think they have a clear picture of where they want to go. And, you know, now they, with Macklin there, it's a big corner piece. So you got to just keep chipping away at it. And it's not, you know, Rome wasn't built in the day and neither was SAP Center. So it's going to be, that was a nice analogy. Hey, but now,
were you even alive when SAP Center was built?
No.
I was. San Jose Arena.
You were San Jose Arena. Yeah, so I just think it is. You're right on it with those two steps. It's going to be a process, and I think they're closer than people think, but they can't lose sight of that and take that for granted, because then that might just re-extend the rebuild process.
JD, you're great, buddy. I'm glad you're still on our team. I really am.
Yeah, and glad you're back.
Thank you.
It came to their senses.
Jeez, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. So thank you very much.
They came to their senses.